Hey everybody, it's Joey here. Something a little different at the beginning of the show until probably the beginning of December. As some of you know, I do some charity work for an agency called the Wayside House of Hamilton. It's integrated residential addiction treatment and supportive housing for men. I've been on the board at Wayside for the better part of a decade now. And, you know, in the addictions community, I really think that we're doing some of the best work in the country, certainly some of the best work in the province. And as many people who listen to this show will understand, because of the rise in prices and the difficulty with getting funding from our usual sources, we've started taking it on ourselves to try and become more autonomous through fundraising. And this is where you come in, I hope. In my Twitter profile, there's a link to our annual fundraiser, the Step Up for Wayside, where a lot of us will be doing a 5K walk or run, but even if you're not in the area and can't make it to that sort of thing, your donation would be appreciated. We stretch those dollars further, and they have more effect than almost any other charitable donation that you can make. And, you know, it's a cause that's near and dear to me and certainly affects someone you know, even if that person is not actively seeking treatment or help. So consider that. And, of course, all your generosity to the podcast and to Wayside is appreciated. It means so much to me that this community has really come together in a lot of different ways. And I hope that the community comes together for Wayside as well. So thank you in advance for your support, and I hope you enjoy the show. The Canadian Bitcoiners podcast is just two guys and maybe a guest or two discussing Bitcoin, Bitcoin equities, and the related macroeconomic space. It's not meant to be financial advice, so please, if you're doing any investing after listening to our program, do your own research, do your own due diligence, and understand that any money you invest can be lost. The show is meant for entertainment purposes only, and we hope you enjoy the program. Friends and enemies, welcome to another episode of the Canadian Bitcoiners podcast. My name is Joey here with a new haircut with my co-host Len, who has the same haircut as last week. And we're happy to be joined today by each other instead of having a guest for the first time in a while. Just me and him. What's going on, buddy? Good to see you.
Quiet time. We actually gather our thoughts with these stories. It's actually going to be pretty good. Yeah, everything's good over here, Joey. Just getting ready for the winter months. Finally changed the oil in my car, put the winter tires on, so I'm ready to rock and roll. How about you, Joey?
I'm going to be doing the same thing probably next week. I'm pretty busy this week. Happy to report I was moving two wheels on the bench press today. Pretty easy, really moving well. And basketball starting up again. So I'll be coaching, with any luck, grade 9s and 10s Thursday nights in Hamilton, which is awesome. Love coaching that. Not to toot my own horn here, but regardless of how much turmoil the league tries to throw my way because of my coaching style, I'm going to try and extend my 3-year championship streak to 4 years this year. We win every year regardless of how peppered in with poor players the league tries to make my team. The sabotage is real, buddy. I'll tell you that.
Wow, you're the Phil Jackson of the GTHA grade 9 basketball league. Yeah, you'll be recruited for grade 10 momentarily, so hang in there. That's not bad. Three times in a row.
Yeah. It's not that hard. Kids, I'll just say this. I don't want to get too far off track. Kids now don't get pushed hard enough, but when you push them, especially young men, they'll respond. And, I'm always happy to play that game with them. It's awesome. And they make it worth it. So good stuff. Len, the price of Bitcoin in American dollars, $61,103.71.
And when Canadian, we got $75,508. We got a ways to go, Joey. Let's see if we get this guy pumping. And before I go on to the show notes, I just want to say a big thank you to Odid Orgil. He joined us. He's from Ocean's. What's
Ocean Falls Ocean? Blockchain.
That's it. Ocean Falls Blockchain CEO. He came on our spaces, Joey, out of the blue on Friday.
Awesome stuff, man.
Yeah. The man was fielding questions, some very tough questions, and he was just, answering them left, right, and center. The man, he's a legend in that regard. He didn't back down. He was just fantastic. Just want to say kudos to him for showing up, and he did a really good job representing his company on our spaces. Mm-hmm. Answered a lot of questions to do with Bitcoin mining companies, and Ocean Falls Blockchain plans to IPO in a not too distant future. So keep your ear to the ground. I'll be reporting it once I hear about it. But if not, if it happens in between episodes, consider dropping some money in it. I think I will be doing so. Not financial advice.
That's a buy for me too, I'm pretty sure. Excuse me. I like that guy. He's a good leader. He mentioned on our show a few times that it's important to have the right guy in front of potential investors. And I think that he, to me anyway, he's that guy. And actually, to the credit of all the CEOs we've talked to, they've all been pretty good on a microphone. And we don't give people a lot of prep. And Len and I can be not abrasive, but certainly we don't mind asking a sharp follow-up here and there. So good for those guys. I appreciate them coming on. Yeah, Oded, man, thank you again. Excellent stuff.
Yeah, agreed. All right, Joey, onwards and upwards. Hopefully the price of Bitcoin goes upwards. I want to talk about what's going on in the news. And the first piece of item I want to talk is about the Bank of Canada. And there was a report this past week from the Globe and Mail that the Bank of Canada will be ending quantitative easing, QE. And they were mentioning that interest rates will also be coming as a result. So right now, the Bank of Canada, they're keeping their rates at 0.25%. And it's expected to remain there until around the middle of 2022. Just doing some digging here, I was looking at the official unemployment numbers. And you know what? The official numbers, they've been dropping. We had a high of 14% unemployment reported back in March 2020. And in September 2021, it was down to 6.9%. And month over month, if you look at the chart, it's been going down. But these are official numbers. I can't say for certain if it's legitimate or not. And to give you some insight into this, it was hovering around a 5% range before March 2020. So we still have quite a ways to go before we are basically got to the point of pre-March 2020 levels. And let's look at inflation. We talked about that last week. Right now, it's around 4.4% officially as of September 2021, and it will likely remain high or higher for quite some time. And even if you take into consideration the misery index, and that's the combination between, adding up the unemployment and inflation numbers, you know, it's going to remain high for some time because it looks like inflation should outpace the unemployment numbers for the foreseeable future. Although you can see the unemployment numbers go down, inflation is probably going to outpace that. So the misery index is going to rise as a result. And all these forecasts take into consideration that the economy is continuing to open. This is the forecast of the Bank of Canada ending quantitative easing and hiring their interest rates. And should there be a spike in anything that would cause politicians to make a knee-jerk reaction, figure out what would make them do that, the projections would obviously have to be reevaluated. And also the Globe and Mail article, they talked about supply chain issues, and it's a big issue that we have to address. This could be problematic to the real inflation numbers. As goods become more scarce and potential food shortages become a reality during the cold winter months. Fruit needs to come from somewhere. They typically come from warmer climates and they come into this country via boats, trucks, etc. Right now, the ports, they're already swelled with boats waiting to enter North America. There is a huge backlog on that front. And on the trucker side, well, some truckers are upset with the requirements for them to get vaccinated. I don't want to talk about that too much, but if they do stage any protest or walk-off, this would have an even larger impact on the already teetering supply chain issue that we are experiencing right now. And due to everything mentioned above, the Bank of Canada has revised its expectation for Canada's economy to grow. Originally, they were saying, well, not originally, a little while ago, they were saying they were expecting Canada's economy to grow in 2022 by 6%. Now they revised it down to 5.1%. So that's a significant drop. And it's pretty scary if they continue to revise it because they could see the writing on the wall. These are all just staggering numbers. And let's just go a little bit further into the numbers here. The Bank of Canada, well, they hold $425 billion of bonds, which was purchased from the government. And the majority of these were purchased within the last 19 months. $425 billion, Joey. Man, that's a lot of moolah. And the Bank of Canada is expected to only purchase $4 to $5 billion per month going forward. That's their intention, their plans going forward. And this would be down from a pace of $5 billion a week from March of 2020. And you know, these rates, when they do increase the interest rates, they suggest that how will it be possible to service such a large debt? Is another story that will need to be addressed is the 2021 BDO Affordability Index. This was released on Monday, which shows 43% of Canadians added to their existing debt thanks to what's happened in the past 18, 19 months. And that is up 4% from the previous year. So 2021 has gone up 4% over 2020 for the debts that their individuals are servicing. So we have individuals and businesses. They will both have to find a way to service a higher debt load and potential increases if there are higher interest rates. Not only them, the government will also have to do the same. It's a large number that debt is, and to service that, it's going to be very difficult. So don't buy into what the Bank of Canada is feeding us. It's going to be difficult to predict what's going to happen in 3 months, let alone what's going to happen in 8 to 9 months. It's going to be scary to think what's going to happen, because if they start raising rates, there's a lot of people that are going to be impacted because they're going to be unable to make ends meet, Julian.
This is basically akin to the United States Federal Reserve dot plot. So we talked about that on the program before. The dot plot is basically this mechanism that the Federal Reserve, the FOMC, will go through probably tomorrow, actually. I don't know if they do it every month, but they do it once a quarter, I think. But the FOMC meeting is tomorrow in America to talk about rates, tapering, and all these other things that will for sure affect markets. Should they? Shouldn't they? I don't know. This is almost a timeline that's in line with the Ontario return to normal announcement from last week. This idea that most capacity limits and whatnot will be completely removed and whatever. If they haven't already, they'll be gone in January, and then the passport system is going to be gone in March, allegedly. So I don't know if that's an election promise. It seems to me that probably it is. But let's see how that goes and see if they hold to that, because that would be in line with this sort of we're exiting emergency measures for the bank. I don't think that's a likely outcome personally for a couple of reasons, but one of them I won't get into. The other one I'll get into right now. Canadian debt for the government at the moment, about $2.43 trillion and growing, as you mentioned, $5 billion at least per month. I would suspect it's probably a little more than that. And with the spending we're seeing in the United States, there's going to be a push, especially from liberal governments, to match their Democratic counterparts and pump money into the economy at a rate never before seen. We saw our prime minister today discussing at the G20 or COP conference. I forget where they are or what they're doing. There's a conference every week anyways. He pictures of yachts and jets every day on Twitter. So they're always somewhere parading around pretending that my car is really the problem, when obviously the opposite is true. That aside, our prime minister today standing in front of the United Nations flag discussing how we're going to eliminate oil production in Canada over the next 15 or 20 years. And I look at that and I think, okay, well, how are we going to pay for some of this debt if we're not selling oil, the natural resource? And that's just one piece. If the debt service, Len, is 1%, okay, that's about $24 billion a year. That's a little bit shy of 7% of the national budget for 2020-2021. At 2%, the math gets a little stickier, but it's probably around 15% or a little shy of 15% of the national budget. The rate right now, which we'll go into in a bit, is higher than 2%. So this is, to me, indicative of a coming problem for our government if they don't change legislation or whatever, you know, our equivalent of a debt ceiling negotiation, maybe with a little extra vinegar on it, would be this: what is the maximum debt service we should allow during these unprecedented times, blah, blah, blah. You can already imagine the speech. So this is also going to happen while, because of our demographics, the number of entitlement payments and payments to, you know, new families who are coming to Canada presumably is going to continue to grow. It's grown every year for the past, you know, two decades or three decades maybe. And I would posit to you that I think it's going to continue to go that direction over the next 30 years. We talked about this in the vein of bonds and how, you know, non-important and non-feasible they are in a portfolio at this time because of the life expectancy. This is more or less the same discussion. It's not a sustainable path, in my opinion. Ultimately, there was a time, though, probably in the 80s and 90s, this would have stopped, where the economy drove political decision-making. We saw this with Black Monday, for example, right? Stock market crash in 87, drives political decision-making, blah, blah, blah. You could even make the case that in 08, the economy drove political decision-making, in that the housing crisis forced a response from the Obama government in the first, you know, in its infancy, basically, to remedy that problem and protect average Americans from a huge drop in the housing market. Those times have passed. Now, politics drives economic policy. And you're seeing that all over the modern world. You have the rise of the modern left talking about printing and welfare programs where there was none before, and government payments and other sort of, you know,
free lunch type of fiscal policy and fiscal response. And it's not just during emergency times, as we know. We just had, you know, many, many American politicians discuss how the $3.5 trillion was not enough. We've spoken on this show about how AOC and her colleagues, her comrades, I should say, on the left, think Powell has not given enough money to the average American, enough money to the American economy. They need someone more dovish than $3.5 trillion. You know, Len, I'm not sure about you, but I think $3.5 trillion probably doesn't even fit on most calculators. So I don't know what kind of calculators these guys got that they want more than that, but I need a screen that big, buddy. And I'm not talking about, you know, LCD or 1080p or whatever the most common pixelation is on these television screens. This is unsustainable. Don't forget as well, like you mentioned, and like we've mentioned on this show before, there's a tendency from our media, nefarious, maybe, I don't know, probably just misinformed and a little bit, you know, a little bit slanted, to always talk about how there's more savings in Canadians' bank accounts than ever before. That may be true, but the fact of the matter is there's more debt as well. So the savings they've accumulated does not outweigh the debt. We've discussed this before. It does not outweigh all the dumb spending they did, credit, housing, vehicle, education, all this stuff, okay? And so the likelihood that these Canadians who have this debt, what is really the chance that an interest rate raise will bury them? Well, let's think about that. Let's talk about it. If you bought your house at 3.5%, okay, which is about the TD posted rate. TD posted rate for a 3-year lock is 3.48. If you bought your house at 20% down, so if you had 20% to put down, which by the way is $150,000 Canadian on 750.
Okay.
So I don't know about you, but for me, if I had to get 150 together, I'd be flipping cushions over here. Okay. I'm sure many people wouldn't even have, like, people who don't have a house don't have the cushions to flip for 150. So probably you're going to pay insurance on top of this. It's going to be more expensive than the number I give you. But let's pretend everyone was responsible with the payments they've received in the last 12 months or 18 months, and they saved the money and bought a house at 750, which by the way is probably about the average for most areas where you'd want to quote unquote live. If you were someone my age, 34, 35, looking to start a family or something of that nature, get a dog with a backyard, whatever. The monthly interest payment at 3.5% on 25-year amortization period is $3,000. Do you pay $3,000 on your mortgage?
You'd be surprised how much we pay.
I don't pay $3,000 on mine. And okay. I think a lot of people who bought a home 5 years ago, 7 years ago, 10 years ago are in that boat. I'll tell you right now, if I had to pay $3,000 in mortgage, I'd be in fucking trouble. I wouldn't have the savings, the investments. This podcast would be done because all my Bitcoin would be going to Kraft Dinner and ramen. Okay, that's $3,000 is a lot of money for two people. My wife and I gross over, like, we're six figures as a household, more than six figures, well into the six figures as a household, and still that would be a pain. Now let's pretend the rate goes up from 3.5 to 4.5. That's pretty reasonable. That's a material raise in rates. That's four quarters at 25 basis points per quarter. That's about what you would see in a rate raise. You don't see more than 25 basis points because there's an intentional sort of slope curvature to these rates. If you raise the rate, that monthly payment goes from $2,995 to $3,320. So it goes up by 10% on 1% raise in the rates. Do you see the problem with the rates going up? This is never gonna fucking happen because the people who own homes won't be able to afford them. Everybody is on the knife's edge. We've discussed this many times. There's, you know, you can Google whatever survey you want in the United States or Canada and find out how many people live in paycheck to paycheck. It's more than are not, basically. And I would argue that some of the people who are not are probably lying because it makes them feel good, or because they just don't know. They're financially not literate enough to realize that they're truly living paycheck to paycheck. So this is, to me, a very material issue. I would also mention that, you know, the government that we just elected is on weaker footing than they were before the election. That was supposed to be a majority win for them, and it was a minority win. And so I don't think they have the political chutzpah to be able to make a policy like this popular, because they didn't get the popular vote. They may say they have a mandate, and I'm going to watch my words here, but the fact of the matter is that mandate comes from about 18% of the total population voting for them. It's fucking nobody, okay? 18% of the population is the number of people who are, you know, the number of people who think the stars and moons aligning means that they have better relationship odds at the bar on a Friday night. It's not representative of the entire country. It's the furthest thing from a mandate that you can get. And so these policies that are going to be unpopular with Canadian homeowners and most of the Canadian population, I don't think are going to be feasible. You know, that's without talking about stuff like, you know, what it would do to discretionary spending. You know, if you raised my mortgage by 10%, my discretionary spending would fall off a cliff. I wouldn't have a second child. I wouldn't buy a home. I wouldn't be driving as much. You would have to give me more government payments. Stuff like the baby bonus would have to go up. This stuff is not feasible. It's not financially feasible, and it's not politically feasible at the moment either. And so I would say that what you're seeing here is a game of chicken, and it's happening here and it's happening in the United States. Now, in the United States, Powell was so kind as to give us the information basically up front and say, well, it's true that an APP halt, like an asset purchase program halt or taper, would normally come with raising rates. This time, it's not going to, or it doesn't have to, which to me means it's not going to. And so I expect here it's going to be the same thing, because even if they raise the rates, let's say they raise a half a point and that mortgage goes up by $500 or by $150, that's going to be unpopular. It's going to be at the same time that gas is going up. It's going to be at the same time that like not everyone is in this laptop protected class. People are going to work. People work in hospitality. They work in schools. They work in, you know, old age homes. They work in retail. They work in all these places. You have to go to work in a lot of these instances. That's a voting block that's too big to dig your nails into. Okay, to force them to say uncle to you. It's too big a voting block. And so when I see these stories about the rates going up, I just say, how much? Because a quarter point, okay, you can maybe convince me you do a quarter. You could even convince me you would do half, and there would be like an additional government subsidy or something like that to help people. But that 1 point, that ain't never gonna happen, man. That ain't never gonna happen because of the debt service, because of the political unpopularity, and because for most people in Canada, it's financially, it's a shovel to the mouth, right? And you can't do that. It's not an option.
The homeowners, they're going to experience any sort of rate increase. It's going to be a lagged effect. People that are on variable mortgages, they're going to feel it immediately. People that are locked in for a period of time, once their term ends, that's when they're going to feel it, because, you know, obviously their term expired and they have to renegotiate a brand new term for their mortgage. So it's going to be a little bit of a lagged effect in the homeownership side of things. But in the rest of the world, people servicing credit card debts, home equity line of credits, whatever it is, they're the ones that are going to feel the impact immediately.
It's going to sting right away. It's going to sting right away for those people. That's why even the people who are, when you say like the 3-year locked, for example, are not going to feel it. They're going to feel it. People just bought, if you just refinanced in the last 2 years, and presumably you would have if you weren't going to feel this for 3 years, you can't tell me these people are not using their HELOC. I think mostly because you'd have to be nuts not to use it. And second, I think that the people who are really going to be hurt by this the most, people who don't really understand how much on the knife's edge they truly are, those are the people who will use it for the wrong things. Those are the people who just bought new TVs, new PlayStations, new phones, all of which I bought. I promise I didn't do it irresponsibly. But this is what I mean though, right? Like this consumer discretionary is a huge chunk of GDP. And so if the consumer discretionary drops off, this is a little bit macro more than Bitcoin, but it makes, you know, it's important because this is what we're talking about when we're saying the system is a house of cards built on sand. You cannot pull one lever now without the other levers being pulled at an accelerating rate the other direction, because people now are more afraid after 2020 than they've ever been before. And this is not, it's not, you know, some news. I'm not breaking any news here. This is how people carry themselves financially. It's not feasible. And so I would bet, you know, pretty good money that this is not going to happen. Certainly it's not going to go up by an entire point. I know that the dot plot is like they're forecasting, what did they say, 4 rate raises next year. That's bullshit. That's never going to fucking happen. But, I've said things like that before and been wrong, just not recently. So I don't want to break my streak, but I feel pretty good about that prediction.
Now let's move on, Joey. That's a big blackout moment for you. Let's talk about the banks in the United States. And it looks like there's going to be some custodial services that are going to be extended to customers. Big banks in the U.S., they have been, there's some discussion by the Federal Reserve, the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, and the Office of the Comptroller of Currency, of the Currency. They have been in discussion for banks to hold on to digital assets like Bitcoin on their balance sheet. And this could be a huge move if it turns out to be true, as this will be a bridge in the traditional finance system for them to get exposure to Bitcoin. And one thing I like to do is I like to read between the lines. And the FDIC's chair was quoted as saying, if we don't bring this activity inside the banks, it is going to develop outside the banks. The federal regulators won't be able to regulate it. So, AKA, they want their slice of the pie to boost their revenue for the government that they are serving at today. And currently there are laws in they are stating that you pay capital gains on any sort of gains that you realize through the sale of Bitcoin and other digital assets. And these laws are applicable both in Canada and I just recently learned also in the United States. And I wonder how many people that are skirting the system by not reporting their earnings from gains by selling digital assets like Bitcoin. People might be buying through a DEX or that way they're avoiding KYC. They could be using mixing services to hide your tracks. They could be entering into Monero and then going back to BTC. They could be mining at home as a way to avoid KYC and gain sats at the same time. So, and these are just ideas I just thought, right off the top of my head when I was writing these notes. There are probably many, many other ways that people could get around the system. But if I'm trying to connect the dots, this announcement, along with the $600 reporting requirement, it would make it much easier for them to collect taxes, track people how much they own, help identify when they made purchases, et cetera, et cetera. And I suspect all this will be used with the guise of money laundering as one of the primary reasons to implement this. But ultimately, they're just trying to raise revenue through taxation. And nonetheless, this announcement probably has more pros than cons. One, it's going to like help legitimize Bitcoin as a currency and in assets. And if banks aren't opening up their vaults to buy Bitcoin, the price has to go up because it's more money that's flowing into Bitcoin and the scarcity already, we know what it is. So price of Bitcoin has to go up. Plus, it will open up doors for a whole new set of lobbyists that might defend Bitcoin. These are the lobbyists that are directly or indirectly involved in the banking sector. And this could be very beneficial to the Bitcoin community with lawmakers. And closer to home, we just had Mark Binns, CEO of Big Digital Assets. And we had him on our show last week. And he mentioned that a mid-tier Canadian bank has approached Netcoins into an exchange that operates in Canada. And they were asking Netcoins to be the back end for digital asset transactions. This news is freaking bullish. I love this. You know, we have now banks. It looks like there's talks by the regulators. There's talks by the people that are overseeing all this. And they might be allowing them to buy Bitcoin and put on a balance sheet. Man, this would be good news, Joey. We're just so freaking early.
I think this is not surprising, right? Like I was looking for the number of dollars in Canadian savings accounts and I was having a hard time finding it. But if I was a betting man, I would bet that compared to the number of dollars going into Bitcoin in Canada, that ratio between savings accounts and Bitcoin is probably shrinking year over year. And I bet you it's been shrinking for 2 years. And I think the banks probably see this. And like Mark said last week, which is a good interview, you should check that out. That's probably our heaviest hitting video, by the way. Pretty sure that's got like 3,000 plays, Aylan. Congratulations. Good idea. Good get. Good editing. I think that, like Mark said, the banks, to their credit, you know, we give them a lot of shit on this show, but to their credit, I think they realize that they're not really making any money from the people who they've been serving for the last little while. I think a lot of older investors are no longer buying stocks, for example. They're selling. You know, if you're 65, 70 years old, you're not going to be doing a lot of buying. You're going to be selling to live. And I think they realize that, you know, the Fortnite crowd and the COD crowd and the NFT crowd, like they're just not going to play ball with mutual funds. They're not going to play ball with, you know, 2 in 10 because they are too intimidated by, I don't know, like figuring out what's in a mutual fund or figuring out what's in a money market fund or figuring out what, you know, what the bank is doing in their back end and how to invest and what's an ETF and all these things that because of gatekeeping and also because there wasn't so many, you know, electronic communications avenues 30 years ago, that's how they built their business. I was joking with my dad a little while ago that, you know, he's almost getting mad because I told him he should take his money away from his financial advisor and just let me manage it. And I was saying like, I won't even change what they have you in. We'll look at what they got in the mailing that you get or the letter that you get. We'll strip it down and we'll do it ourselves. And that way he saves you the 2 in 10. And he almost couldn't believe it, that it was that easy. And he's a smart guy. He's been investing for a long time. And, you know, that's the kind of person I think that the bank realizes they're not going to have at their disposal. The people who are too busy to deal with stuff like this, they're going to have kids my age and younger who are going to say, hey, like, I'm not paying anything for my my investing, famously these sort of Quest Trade and whatnot commercials during football, you know, where the guy is like swallowing awkwardly while his younger brother tells him he's not paying fees. Like, this is the kind of stuff that goes on now. So banks have to do this, but I'm done with the kudos now. Okay, that's where it stops. Those props stop right there. And I'll tell you that it's still not enough. They're still way behind the eight ball. Friend of the show, Mario Gibney, who works for Ledin, who's going to be on in a couple of weeks. You know, ask him or ask BlockFi or ask any of these, you know, DeFi staking tokens even. Like, pick your garbage token. I don't care what it is. It's not enough just to tell someone you'll hold their Bitcoin, because Ledin will hold your Bitcoin too. And they'll give you 8%. Is the bank going to give you 8% on that Bitcoin? That custody? There's no way. There's no way. Because they don't want to do that. They want to charge you for holding it. That's what they want to do. And so that model is broken. And so I look at this story, and on one hand, like I just said, like, you know, kudos to them for trying to figure this out and kind of understanding where the demographics are going. But they still don't have a clue. You can't charge people to hold Bitcoin. No one is going to pay for that. And like I said before, all it takes is one of your smart buddies who you respect, who's got their head on straight, who's doing financially well and understands responsibility as far as custody, to tell these guys at a cocktail party, you know, like, hey, why are you doing that? Why don't you do it with Ledin? Like, they're reputable, they're regulated, Canadian government, like, whatever, gave them a business number. That's where I keep mine. Yields 8%, by the way. What do you do, right? Like, that's going to be the new Questrade commercial. It's going to be one guy talking about his Ledin account, one guy talking about his TD Bitcoin account. Like, these things are not the same, okay? They are not the same. And I'll tell you right now, banks, I already think banks are going to die, but this is watching an accelerated path to irrelevancy, because this is how stupid these people think you are. Banks think you're so fucking dumb that you're going to pay somebody to hold your Bitcoin when you could A, do it yourself very easily. Like, Ledger Live looks like a fucking video game. It's so easy to use. You know, Cold Card is easy to use for anyone under 30 or 40, as long as you got a little bit of technical know-how. We talked on this show, Len, about how you didn't know anything about a Lightning node. You spun one up on like a Saturday afternoon. It's really not that hard. And you know what forces people to learn, Len, faster than anything else forces them to learn? Taking their fucking money while they're not understanding what to do. That's really talk about a dumb business model. You're catalyzing people to figure out how to do stuff and then trying to tell them it's in their best interest. Like, leave it to banks to do this kind of stuff. It just cracks me up. The other thing I would say is that Binz, for all the things I disagree with Mark on, and there's a few things I disagree with him on, the coin mixing thing I disagree with him on, among other things, but Mark is right about one thing. Banks need regulated partners, because they are the most heavily regulated industry probably on the planet, and it's for good reason. There's a lot of people who are older than me and Len, and with less technical know-how than me and Len, you know, who don't refer to cash as fiat paper tokens and melting icebergs and all these other names that we've come up with over the last 5 years, right? There's people who still think cash is important and investing is important and mutual funds represent a way to save money. These people need to be protected. And banks offer that protection. I understand this. It doesn't mean I agree. I don't think that these regulated services, you know, are doing everything they can for Bitcoin as opposed to doing everything they can for their bottom line. But also, we as investors, if I put my equities hat on for a second here, as investors, you have to decide if that's important to you. I'll tell you right now, I'm invested in big digital assets after that interview. How can you not be? I was invested in them before. I'm invested in them again. And I'm invested in some other stuff that people don't like, Coinbase famously and other places. These services have to play ball because it's in their fiduciary responsibility set to do so and protect their investors. And so you're going to see more stories like this. You may not like them all the time, but you know, ultimately it's up to you. If you want to buy the underlying, you buy the underlying. If you want to buy the banks who custody, you do that. If you want to buy big and Coinbase and whatever else, you buy those things. But all in all, the story really is it starts and stops here. You see this action, this news item, and ask yourself, in 5 years, is there going to be more people who want Bitcoin than there are now, or less? And I think the answer is obvious.
Mm-hmm. In your speech there, you actually were reiterating exactly what Candace just wrote, and she was saying that the banks have to change or they will be made irrelevant. So
for sure.
They have to evolve, and if they don't, they're just going to be left behind. And you know, it's not going to be the first company or industry that kind of just was left by the wayside because they weren't able to evolve and keep up with the time. So,
well, they just think the moat's bigger than it is, right? Like, that's really the thing that I if you think that as a bank, whatever, I know it's already 7 o'clock. I'm not going to drag this anymore, but it's so obviously a dumb, it's a dumb model.
Yeah, we should actually just do a show on the banks. We could spend a couple hours discussing it. But I want to move on and talk about some ETF news. And this, you know, we talked about ETFs on the last episode, and it's just ever evolving. Lots of things are happening on this space. And we had the success from the ProShares ETF, the futures ETF, and that sparked a lot of interest. And now there's some potential new ETFs that are going to be coming down the pipe. And first off, we have Valkyrie. They filed an offer for a 1.25 leverage Bitcoin futures ETF. The one thing I hit me was 1.25 leverage. Like, that's an odd number, 1.25. Nonetheless, it was supposed to be a leverage-based futures ETF. And it was going to have exposure to the Bitcoin reference rate. It could hold futures, swaps, options, and forwards. And the ticker for this, it was going to be BTFX, or could still be that, but it's been reported that it looks like the SEC may not be approving it. Valkyrie may have jumped the gun here. And the SEC said that they're just not going to go ahead with approving any sort of leveraged ETFs at this time, which, yeah, I'm okay with that. But then again, those who like to play the leverage game, they're going to still have to stick with Binance or FTX, where they could do the 25 times leverage trading and get liquidated within a few minutes. So there's opportunities for them to play with fire. And I'm waiting also, you know, if you're talking about leverage trades or leverage ETFs for Bitcoin in the United States, it's going to happen here in Canada because we have the Horizons ETF team. It's inevitable. I think that they're going to have to announce that something is going to give with that because they already have a number of different leveraged ETFs in the system. Why not a leveraged Bitcoin ETF? You know, they already have two Bitcoin ETFs, a bull and a bear ETF. Why not have a Bitcoin one? A leverage one. I think it's just going to happen. But nonetheless, the one thing that's going to happen down south, it looks like when there's a spot ETF, and this is going to be the good one. And it looks like it's going to be approved in the middle of 2022, according to Valkyrie. So that's going to be the big one. And Grayscale is probably going to be one of the bigger players. I think you've mentioned it many times, actually, Joey, that you think it's going to be the first one to be approved. Am I right to say that?
For sure. That's going to be the first spot ETF.
Yeah. So that's going to move the market. You know, once that one gets approved, regardless if it's first, second, or third, I mean, there's so much behind it that it's going to move the needles here, and the price of Bitcoin is going to freaking spike. And what they're trying to do, they're trying to change convert their existing ETF into an ETF that is pegged directly to Bitcoin. So, like what we have here in Canada with several different ETFs like BTCC that immediately comes to mind. And one thing that actually came out is that there's an evaluation that was done. There was an investment made. They raised Grayscale. $700 million was raised, and their valuation is now at $10 billion. This is the company which owns Grayscale. They raised $700 million, and it's a $10 billion valuation. And Google's parent company invested into it. So there's a lot of interest in what Grayscale has to offer. So they not just offer Bitcoin ETFs or the Bitcoin ETF that they have right now. They have a lot of different ETFs, but it looks like there's a lot of interest to actually get in on the ground floor over there. And finally, there was an ETF that was issued or was application was filed. Direction is the company name, and it's a bear ETF. And it will maintain short exposure to Bitcoin future contracts issued by the Chicago Mercantile Exchange. And the product won't directly invest in Bitcoin. And this is similar to the Horizons ETF, BITI. So it looks like there's lots of activity going on in the ETF world right now. And we'll be talking a little bit more about other ETFs going in the show today. But just what's going on right now in the States, there's so much movement surrounding the ETF front that it's hard to just basically grasp what it is right now, because in the next hour, it's going to change. And I'm just waiting for that spot ETF to be approved. It looks like Valkyrie's saying the middle of 2022, but hopefully sooner. Once the Grayscale ETF is converted into a spot ETF, man, oh man, it's going to be fun times ahead, Joey.
Yeah, I think that's a no-brainer. That's going to be the first ETF. We talked about that many times. That's going to be one of my greatest calls ever. And I've made many great calls over the course of my life. I would just, I mean, I don't have a ton to add to this. That's a good summary of the sort of current state of affairs. I'll mention that among the investors in DCG, I think SoftBank is in there too. Our friend Massa Cap was tweeting about it today, and I didn't read the tweets in detail. I did favorite them, so maybe I'll have a look later, but I can't recommend following Massa Sun Capital enough. He's a wealth of information, and he's a good Bitcoiner to follow if you're looking for some more insights into the where the wind is going as far as you know, the sort of money that's coming in from traditional finance. I'll just mention one thing. Think about the number, and then like you don't have it here, but there's a kind of a picture floating around on Twitter of like all the Bitcoin ETF filings on the Bloomberg terminal, and there's like fucking 60 of them or something. It's a lot. And compare that picture to what traditional finance, you know, geniuses have been saying for the last 5 years, but there's no demand. People don't want it. It's too risky. Compared to what Ethereum people are saying, we're the one who's growing. DeFi is the future. Like, I got news for you. DeFi is a way to mint worthless tokens for buying worthless tokens. Ethereum is so dicey as far as what they think, as far as what the government thinks it could happen with this Ethereum 2.0 move, that they're not even going to talk about any Ethereum ETF until that 2.0 move happens, if it happens, to make sure there's no flaws in that network, because that thing is so riddled with a history of problems that they're not going to expose investors to that. That's a fact. And I look at these stories and I think, what is stopping you from investing in Bitcoin with all this stuff going on? I would love to know. That list has really gone from, you know, 100 items long, right, to basically none. And I don't know if you saw, this is like late breaking, maybe like 4 or 5 o'clock today, but the Tether and stablecoin regulation coming from Janet Yellen's Treasury Department. So if we're going to talk about that, I'll leave it for now.
But, no, we're not. I wasn't.
Okay, so basically, you know, people were talking about how they want the stablecoins regulated out, their securities. Well, guess what? The Treasury doesn't fucking think so, dummy. All they're saying is that if they're going to have deposits, it has to be with FDIC insured banks. That ain't security regulation out of existence, guys and girls. That's legitimacy. That's a foothold on the market. And I'm telling you, like, whether you like stablecoins or not, you can't keep talking about Tether, because Tether's not the only one. And Tether's going to become a shrinking piece of the pie, much the same way as the Chinese hash power became a shrinking piece of the pie, much the same way as the black market activity became a shrinking piece of the pie, much the same. Like, you can go on and on down the list. Over time, the market will adjust, and the people who are in the market will park their funds in a way that makes sense for them as far as risk. And what you're going to see is people leaving Tether as a stablecoin, moving to USDC, moving to US, whatever Coinbase's newest thing is, or FTX's newest thing, because those guys will play within the boundaries set by the American government. They're not going to regulate this stuff out of existence for two reasons, like we talked about before. One, this is a blow off top for all this like free money people have been getting, so it doesn't all go into Apple, and Tesla doesn't go to 10,000. So they got that. And then also, there's just too many tentacles now in the traditional finance system from crypto. It's not going away. So people who aren't invested in it, like, listen, God bless. I wish you all the best. But I think you're making a really big mistake. A huge mistake, in fact.
The CBSC, the Canadian Bitcoin or Stablecoin, that's the one that they should be talking about. And I'll be happy to provide them the white paper. And we can run with that one, Joey. I think there's lots of opportunity for us to advance the cause. If we just,
I could probably write the white paper while you do the next story. It's not going to have much on it.
No, you know what?
All deposits held by me, guarded by my dog. That's it.
So that's it for the A-Base news. Let's go on and transition to the Canadian side of things, Joey. And the first story is definitely going to hit home for you, because the next 420 people on the wait list for ShakePay have been earned access to the ShakePay card. So tell us a little bit about the card, Joey, because I understand that you got access to it. Were you able to make any purchases with it? And if
I haven't used it yet.
Oh,
busy day today. But okay, so you get,
do me a favor. I'll just ramble on. Go to the store, buy something, and come back when I finish rambling. Sure. Hopefully, you can give.
Well, it's a Visa card, right? So what I may do is the next time, like, my dog's running out of treats. So what I might do after the podcast, maybe we can do it up for the post show or whatever. I might try and use it on Amazon and see if it works. And if it does, then you know, I'll see the thing in my comments here. I've seen the interface a few times. It's sharp, I gotta say. And like,
it won't work for Amazon. I can tell you why.
It won't work. So it only works in person, tap only or whatever. It's, that's right now. That's okay too. That's okay too. I'm good with that. I go to Shoppers Drug Mart. I'm literally addicted to coffee pods. So I'll be there like probably tomorrow or the next day, load up. Len, the sats back thing is, I think it's a real tide shift for the average person, because there's a standard issue that people have with buying Bitcoin is that they don't want to spend money on something like that if they don't understand the asset, right? But like we talked about before, the cashback on a credit card sucks. It's just a shitty Chuck E. Cheese token that you have to use to just pay the bill at the end of the month anyway, right? So why not try this? Yeah, you know what I mean? So like, why not try this? So I think it's great. And honestly, like the Apple Wallet, as an aside, I'm blown away by how good it is, by the way. I can't believe I wasn't using this the last 5 years. I've been living in the Stone Age, like the banks.
How does it differ from the Google wallet?
I never used the Google Wallet. I never got around to doing it. Now I did it with all my cards. Now I know.
It's living in the Stone Age there. So you basically don't need to carry around your wallet.
My wife too. Like we were at the gym. I guess this would have been Friday last week, maybe. Anyway, so we're in the gym and like we had to go pick up some milk and eggs and standard stuff that we go through a lot of, and she's like, do we have to go to the car? Like, do you want to get your wallet? I said, no, I got my phone. I'll just use my phone. And it was like the look in her eye was like, oh wow, like neither of us have been doing this, and literally everyone we know has probably been doing it, and we just got left behind. Very sad.
You missed a glorious opportunity, Joey. Anyways, that from what I understand, it has to be the tap version. The physical card is not available, so I don't think you can use it to make purchases on Amazon. That's from what I understand. If I'm wrong, somebody let me know and I'll be happy to update my knowledge. But look, Daniela said she'll be happy to spend it for you, Joey, if you're looking to
not a surprise. Not a surprise.
And Candace's thing, she was mentioning that she's stuck in a waiting list. Apparently the waiting list is locked and has been locked for some time. So if you're signed up to it, whatever number you are on it, you are gonna remain there until I think everybody gets issued the card. So the waves are increasing. First wave was 50 people. Second wave was 100 people. Third wave was 150 people. And this wave was 420 people. So they're moving up.
The first 1,000 or something like that at this point.
It's ramping up. And you know what? I can't wait to see next week. It could be four digits release. Who the heck knows? But
I can bring in this. We can start doing on this show the segment I do on the Two Whites and a Blue show. What did you spend your money on last week? Shake Pay 2% back.
All I want to know is how many sats you earned. I don't want to know what you spent it on, how many sats you earned. So Joey, that's it for Shake Pay. That is fantastic news that more people are getting it. But I want to move on to Mogo. It's another card that is in Canada. And you're going to love this story, Joey. This one, when I saw it, I just had to write it down because this is right up your alley. And they're launching the world's first climate-positive Bitcoin card. So essentially, it's an initiative that where you make Bitcoin purchased on a Mogo platform. It's not a Bitcoin card. It's just climate-positive Bitcoin. So whenever you purchase Bitcoin from the Mogo platform, it's going to be climate-positive. And they're doing so by planting trees to offset the CO2 emissions produced by miners that mine Bitcoin. And they're going to be planting even more trees beyond what's the minimum amount. And for each Bitcoin mine, an estimated 421,000 pounds of CO2 emissions are released into the atmosphere. And they're going to be offsetting this by planting a whole bunch of trees. So, I would imagine now, Joey, you're going to be switching the platform of choice to buy Bitcoin because they're going to be planting trees to offset the CO2 emissions as a result of mining Bitcoin. So there you go, Joey. I think this is a great initiative on their part, and they might capture you as a new client.
Did you see Pomp on Instagram today take that picture of the whatever climate conference, like all these leaders?
We'll be talking about them today. Don't worry.
I'm sure you got it lined up. So I'll leave it alone for now. But like, I think about these climate things, and this is a little tinfoil hatty, though even the most urgent sort of opponent of this kind of thinking would have to admit that this is more realistic an outcome than it was 6 months ago. These cards that measure carbon footprint, they're going to be a huge problem for people, because if they start to become the norm, they're going to start charging you extra interest on the carbon positive purchases you make. They're going to start charging you extra for things like meat and cheese and dairy. They're going to start charging you extra for putting gas in your car. Like, as if you don't pay enough already for gas in your car. This stuff is not – you got to be really careful about this because I think – and I went off on a tangent on the Two White show on the weekend. And I'll say it again here. There's this disconnect for people. And Mogo, you know, whatever. They're doing something they think is going to be high demand. Mogo doesn't give a fuck about the environment. I know it. You know it. They know it. Okay? It's always the same. And so, like, these guys don't care. They want to make money, and they know that. Because if they didn't, they would find other ways to reduce their footprint. They wouldn't give you a carbon card or whatever this thing is. But I'll tell you right now, the disconnect people have is they think about oil and gas and energy. And they don't think about how literally every service and every product they hold dear and use on a daily basis and rely on is oil-based. Every fucking one of them. It's your home materials. It's transportation. It's the textbook cover on your kids' books. It's your shoes. It's your clothes. It's your phone. It's your computer. It's this mic. It's my chair. It's everywhere. It's everywhere. If you are willing or think it's so critical, okay, to embrace Gretaism and save the environment, discard all those things immediately. But until you do that, I don't want to hear from you about what I have to do. Much the same as I don't want to hear from Prince Charles and these other, you know, ancient leaders who very clearly think that you're stupid. I feel like I'm saying this every week, but like it's popping up so many more times than it used to. This general feeling of, this is something we can send out to people and communicate because they just won't get it or they'll just agree. And Mogo's doing it now with the carbon thing. You got these guys who you're going to, I'm sure, just absolutely tear a strip off. I'm going to go make a piece of pizza while you do that. Probably it'll take so long. But like, it's, Len, it sucks. And I know, like, to the credit of the CEOs we've had on, Oded specifically talking about green, he gets it, right? He's talking about how he wants to do good for the environment, but not if it's going to cost him on his bottom line. And that's the kind of thinking you want to have, because naturally these things will come if the market demands them. And if the market truly demands them, you won't have to force it with taxes and tariffs and you know, other points of friction and pinch points for people. I hate this. I hate it. And I really think it's like,
no,
I really just think it's like counterproductive for the civilization. I can't be alone in thinking this. Like, that's not really that controversial a take. Everything you have is built on oil. And until you, I mean like the royal you, until like the royal you starts throwing this stuff away and then says that, oh, well, we really have to buckle down. Everyone's got to do it. Like, you go first, basically, is what the t-shirt should say for people in my shoes. After you. And I'm going to keep saying that until the cows come home.
I knew when I saw this story that it would invoke a response from you. So, yeah. Patted it back for me because this was a no-brainer. Joey, want to move on. Talk about Bitfarms. And they are building two new farms in the city of Sherbrooke with 78 megawatts of total capacity. This news, Joey, because from the last few months, it seems like they have reached their capacity in the province of Quebec for mining more Bitcoin. This is fantastic news. So these two new farms, they're going to be built in two separate phases in 2022. And in fact, there's going to be a third farm that they're hoping to secure that will have a capacity of a further 18 megawatts and all using cheap hydroelectricity. Now, I love this information. So right now they have five fully operational farms at the moment and four new ones are under construction. Also today, they came out with some information about their October, what they did in October. They mined 343 Bitcoin for the month of October. Their total Bitcoin holdings is 2,640. Their hash rate has exceeded 1.8 exahash per second. They mined on average 11 Bitcoin per day. Not too fucking shabby. And these guys, they plan to go to 8 exahash by the mid or end of 2022, they're going to be moving on up in the Bitcoin mining world. Love them.
How much are you holding? You holding a significant chunk there or what?
I have some. I don't want to say how much, but I got some in them. They're not our biggest holding, not by a long
no,
shot.
Not Hut, no?
The Hut is. Hut. What the heck happened to Hut, man? They've been kicking ass lately, so yeah.
Yeah. We might get there at some point. On this particular story, I'll just say Canadian energy is available for people who want to engage with willing governments. And it seems to me, based on the talks we've had with the CEOs over the year-ish, as well as some of the stuff you see on Twitter and the stuff we talk about on this show, seems governments are becoming more willing to engage, wouldn't you say? Even in the face of this sort of ESG mobbing insanity, I think that they seem to be willing to engage and really max out. So that, to me, again, like, you can put whatever tax you want on stuff, but if you're willing to engage with Bitcoin miners, it tells me you don't actually care. You care about the bottom line. You care about what's good for your province, which is good for the people who live there.
If there's an excess amount of energy, and we'll be talking about this in the story in a little while, why not mine Bitcoin with that excess energy? Like, what options do you have? I know in the case of Quebec, they could sell it to the state of New York, but they're going to be selling it at a loss, about half the price that they would if they sold it domestically in Quebec. And also there's the transmission loss to send the energy to New York because it's such a long distance from where it's being generated. So it just makes sense for them to direct it towards Bitcoin miners. You know, why not?
But I agree.
Nonetheless, let's move on. And we'll be talking about Hive, Joey. And they said they made an announcement this past week. They have agreed to invest $450,000 Canadian in Network Entertainment Inc. It's an award-winning media production company as a means to gain exposure to the network's emerging NFT business. Hive, they mine Ethereum Classic. What they did, they mine Ethereum. Now they're in the NFT game with this $450,000 investment. What the heck are you guys doing? But on the plus side, they announced that they ordered 6,500 Avalon Bitcoin mining machines. And currently they're hashing out Bitcoin at 1.2 exahash per second. They plan to move up to 2 exahash per second by the end of 2021. And they want to ultimately get to 3 exahash by March 2022. So on that front, pretty darn good. But on the NFT side of things, what the hell, man? What the hell?
I don't get the NFT thing. And I'll listen, I think I've come off my position of like people who buy NFTs are stupid and NFTs are stupid and I don't want to be associated with stupid people. I've come off that a bit just because I understand why you would want to own like whatever the public key or private key, whatever, for that like particular piece of JPEG. What I don't get is like, even if you buy it, even if you own it, even if you have it, like there's no mechanism for you to display it with, right? So if, until that comes along, I don't really get it. Again, though, much the same, I cannot in good faith say that these companies should ignore ESG and do what's good for the bottom line, and then also say that they should ignore NFTs. Because if NFTs are good for their bottom line, then go for it. I don't care. If the market is demanding NFTs, give it to them. If the market stops demanding them, or if they realize that these things are ridiculous, then they'll stop on their own. But I'm all for making money. And so if they want to do it through NFTs, I don't have any position in Hive at the moment. But you know, I would guess, Len, like on that news, the stock jumped today.
Actually, that news came out last week. So I didn't take a look to see if their stock jumped as a result of that. It was a modest investment, $450,000. It wasn't going to be earth-shattering in that regards, but it does give them some exposure to the NFT side of things. What does the stock look like, Joey, in this past week?
It's more or less flat, 460. It's up a little bit today, but it was down a little bit on Friday. So, I'm just saying, like, from an intellectual honesty standpoint, I can't say one without the other. So I'll leave it there. I don't have NFTs. You're never going to sell me your NBA Top Shot or your frog with a joint in his mouth, JPEG, rainbow eyes. I don't care. But if people want them and they're willing to pay Hive to make it happen, great. It's great for people who hold Hive. That's for sure.
JSN-S9, he's really, if you look at the comments, he really wants us to interview somebody from CryptoStar. Perhaps we'll have this in a medium-term future. For the short term, we're pretty darn packed. We're lined up, as Joey called it, the murderer's row of guests. And so maybe in a new year, we'll be extended olive branch to CryptoStar and see if they want to come on our show to discuss their business. Yeah. So keep that, but for, next month or two, probably not.
It's busy. Anyways. December's busy. Like it's Christmas. And like I said at the beginning of the show, I got stuff lined up now, more than like I used to. So
we're doing 5 shows a week come Christmas time, so we're going to be really busy. I want to talk about big digital assets, and they announced a $100,000 investment in Liquid FinTech Corp. And this is a very successful, they made some very successful recent strategic investments in WonderFi, Boo, Zenledger, whatever. And they also added Liquid to their minority investment portfolio. So big digital assets, there is a connection between them and Liquid. The co-founder sorry, the founder of Liquid is also a co-founder of Big Digital Assets. So there is a connection between the two companies, but it looks like that they're investing in Liquid. Big does believe in Liquid, in the product that they're going to be ultimately serving to businesses, which is the Lightning Network. I love it. And on a separate note, we'll be talking about Liquid going forward. I got another story, but if you want to talk about Big Digital Assets or Liquid in general, Joey, I leave it to you. I know there was some good news on that front.
I'm fine. I mean, the thing I think I would just say is if you like this from Big and Liquid, then you got to love the stuff about Big and the banks and how that might look for, you know, synergistic relationships between Lightning and Bitcoin holding and spending. I mean, whatever, man, like I've given myself up here. I'm no longer unbiased because I have a position now in Big, a fair size one. So, thanks for the interview, Mark, I guess. Hope it goes well on the Liquid side.
So you got an interesting
Sean.
You got a Liquid indirectly invested into Liquid then, because if you own Big Digital Assets, you have some exposure then to Liquid.
Right.
So anyways, moving on to Liquid, they closed $8 million financing endeavor. So they basically raised $8 million. The purpose of that was they want to purchase additional Bitcoin and advance their position as a key contributor in the Lightning Network. And sure enough, shortly thereafter, after making all this money, they announced that they purchased some Bitcoin. They now hold 133 Bitcoin on their reserves. They're going to be using this to open, I'm assuming, to open channels with other nodes in the Lightning Network sphere. It's going to give them opportunity to create liquidity and have earn sats through running transactions, etc. If you run a Lightning node, you're going to have some liquidity to it. 133 Bitcoin is a lot. Good for them, because you know what? This is the only way to actually advance the cause, to make Lightning Network viable, and to if they're going to bring this to businesses to Canada, and that's their goal, they want to allow businesses in Canada to take use of Lightning, and they're the ones that are going to be offering the services. You got to have the Bitcoin on the reserve to do this. So, you know, $8 million of money that they created or they earned by selling shares, that's one thing, but they're using this for a good cause. They're buying Bitcoin, and you know, the price of Bitcoin goes up. So that $8 million that they spent is, you know what? It's money well spent, I think, because buying Bitcoin, it's a good investment.
Who's going to be the first company in Canada to use Lightning for payments, and why is it Tahini's?
There you go.
it's got to be, right? Like, I just think about the demo for them. Like, anytime I've been to a shawarma place, everyone in there is either like, I hate to say it, but like either baked or hungover. So there's only really one age demo that fits really well. It's the same age demo that Bitcoin really fits.
Well, you know,
so I would expect them to be, if not the first, among the first.
We'll be talking to somebody over there in a not too distant future, so we could be asking this question direct.
That's right. Yeah.
So yeah,
don't give away the guest list.
Who knows? But Liam is writing in the comment section. He's tempted to start a node this month. If you don't have any technical knowledge, or if you're, you know, you're kind of scared with dealing with anything that, you know, might be Linux related, stay away from it, because you have to have, you got to be able to use Linux. And if you don't know it, it's going to be very difficult to operate it and to ensure that it's running at its peak efficiency. Also, you're going to have to sync sats into that. If you don't want to put any Bitcoin in it, it's going to be virtually useless. And, several million sats is generally the bare minimum to get one going. So keep that in mind if you plan on running a node. Without putting a few million sats and without the knowledge, technical knowledge, it's going to be very hard to have a Bitcoin node, a Lightning node operating in peak efficiency. That's just my 2 cents for Liam. And moving on, we'll talk about Blue Sky Digital Assets. We talked about them briefly in, I think, the previous episode, ticker BTC, great ticker. They recently ordered some GPU mining rigs, and they're expected to be put into production within the next 15 to 30 days. These are obviously going to be mining not Bitcoin, because Bitcoin uses ASIC miners, not GPU miners. They also confirmed receipt of $1.2 million of strategic mining hardware for Bitcoin. Looks like that they're doing what they can to increase their hash rate. Good on them. They're hoping to mine $1.6 million of digital assets per quarter. Not too shabby for a smaller miner, but you know, they mine not just Bitcoin. It looks like they mine other digital assets as well. So keep that in mind if you're trying to get a value play. This is not 100% Bitcoin. So it may work for some, but it may not work for everybody, Joey.
Does it make you feel like you should be mining at home when you hear stories like this? Because I got to tell you, between the Steve Barber black box stuff and the other people who are mining, you know, with like one or two S19s or S9s even at their homes and hearing stories like this, I just think like maybe I should be doing this at my house somehow. And I know it's not maybe super cost efficient over the first year or 2 years, but it seems to me like a lot of these smaller corporate miners really don't care that they're maybe not going to be making that much money and really don't care that it's not going to be cash flow positive either. And it makes me think that there's, again, like we say this every week, but the wind is really like in the sails in this thing. And I feel like anything you can do to get Satoshis apart from the DCA stack, like if you can do it, you know, you could do the MSTR with your house and buy one of these black boxes with the two S19s in it. I don't know, man. It's on the table for sure. I'd have to convince my wife of that. For that'd be a tough sell, probably. But you know, it seems like there's a lot of people getting into this now in smaller numbers. And yeah, I just wonder, is it possible for home mining to really have a true renaissance, not just a you know boutique discussion piece that you have at the side of your house, but actually something that makes money, secures a network, et cetera, et cetera. So I don't know. Let's see.
Yeah, I think there's a possibility. You're never going to make it big doing that. And it's not going to make a huge difference on the network itself from the home mining aspect, because there's, you know, when you talk about Bitfarms, we talk about Marathon. So, you know, they're just humongous. So having an S9 here or an S19 there, it's going to help the network, but it's going to just be drops in the bucket. Well, actually drops in the ocean to be more specific. But anyways, Joey, moving on, we'll be talking very briefly about the crypto exchange CoinSmart. And it was announced this past week, they are now registered as a restricted dealer across Canada. From what I understand, this is a very select group of exchanges on this list. Coinberry and NetCoins, I think, are the only other two that I could think of. That are restricted dealers in Canada. So CoinSmart joined that list. Kudos to them. And it, who knows, it might be some opportunities for them to get involved with the banking side of things, because as we discussed with Mark, banks want to deal with registered exchanges. So here's another one that's available for people to take advantage of.
Stay tuned for, I'll spoil this now. We sort of double booked by mistake, and CoinSmart's going to hear this and realize that we double booked anyway. So we sort of double booked, and CoinSmart is going to be on this program Friday afternoon, and we're going to try and get that out. I think, what'd you say, Lance? Saturday, you want to put it out?
It'll be Saturday or Sunday that the interview will actually be released, but I don't know. It's going to be this weekend sometime.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then if we're lucky, Justin, the CEO, is going to come do spaces with us for a bit at 4:45, 5 o'clock. So Brandon and Dan, if you're listening, the Green Candle Boys, just so you know, we got a special guest again this week who can answer some questions about this process that we've seen a few companies go through in the last little while. And this will be the first exchange we've seen go through this. So Mark has been public for a while with big digital assets, but this would be the first, I don't know what you say, and this is more of like a retail only exchange. It is not quite the toolkit that Bins and Big and NetCoins have at their disposal. This is sort of more buy and sell, that's it.
You know what, it's hard for me to say because I don't know enough about them to make an informed comment. So it's hard for me to say. You might be right, but I can't add on it. I just don't know.
Okay. But yeah, anyway, Justin's coming on this week. We're looking forward to having him. Hope you guys tune into that. That'll be a good show.
Mm-hmm. Joey, let's talk about the company we talk about on a weekly basis. And who would that be, Joey?
LUXX.
Luxfolio. And just today, they announced that they achieved 103% month-over-month increase in mining revenues. And this is a 24% increase in their Bitcoin reserves. Their mining site operating 1,300 miners at 123 petahash per second as of September 30th, 2021. Sorry, that's an increase from September 2021, where they had 1,025. So it looks like, you know, 275 more miners in the span of 1 month. Not too shabby. Their monthly rewards were 22.5 Bitcoin for the month of October. I love it. This is a company that is growing. Their Bitcoin reserves is 42 Bitcoin. Love it. You know, the Luxfolio, it's a the value play, from what I understand, is around the 90 cent range right now. But every week there's good information coming from this camp. And you know what? We may be talking to somebody from them in a not too distant future.
Absolutely giving up all the guests coming up. Yeah, so Lux Folio, you know, we do talk about them quite a bit. I would just, two things. One, I would say that it's easier for a small company to have good news steadily, much the same way. This is, I would equate this to like beginner gains in the gym. Everyone who goes to the gym for the first time after that first month, you look absolutely, it's a huge transformation. The different kind of lines in your physique that you cross during that first month when you've never worked out before, it's a big deal. But once you hit, you know, 185 on the bench, getting to 205 is a little bit harder than it was, you know, going from zero to 185. And I think Lux Folio might have that problem at some point, just like all these smaller equities do. But like Len says, you know, the momentum here, pretty strong. They have what I would say is pretty competent leadership. I've watched a few interviews with Dean Linden, and I'm looking forward to talking to him. I think he's going to have some good insight, but I got some questions for old Dean too, though, just like our other guests. So let's wait and see what that looks like. But yeah, good stuff from them again this week. Haven't had a negative luck story, I don't think, eh, Len?
Only one, when they purchased a company that mines Ethereum.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Whatever. Yeah. So we'll be M&A, talking
about I don't care. If it's M&A, I don't care. Their company's still doing all the right things.
We'll be talking about Bitcoin mining, Ethereum mining, and maybe hockey. We'll see if he's wanting to talk about that. I want to talk about Fortress Technologies. This is the company that has Marty Bent as one of the directors. They announced that they bought, or they're buying 4,500 Bitcoin mining machines from Bitmain. And these are the S19J models. So these are some pretty fantastic ones. This is going to more than triple their hash rate from 195 petahash per second to 645 petahash per second. These machines are scheduled for delivery and installation from April to September 2022. It looks like the chip shortage is impacting the S19 creation. So these guys they have to wait almost a full year before these are fully installed and operating on their network. But nonetheless, they're going to be tripling their hash rate when all these 4,500 Bitcoin mining machines are installed. Do you think they'll donate one of them to us, Joey? Just one?
Somehow I doubt it. Worth mentioning, though, we talked about chip shortages and how they relate to Bitcoin miners and all these companies. You think it's fair to say that if these guys are buying, you know, 7-8 figures of miners, that there's a guarantee that the miners, even after delivery date, will still be profitable for another 12 months? So does that mean that Bitmain is basically not going to make anything better than the S19J for 2 years?
No. They're for sure they're making, trying to innovate to make something better.
Basically the biggest player, right? So they, like, are they? Yeah. So do they have to be the first one to market? Like, yeah. I don't think they do. I think people are catching up with them, and they don't have to innovate until someone outdoes them. It seems to me like a company wouldn't spend $10 million or $20 million or $100 million in some of the cases, you know, some of these bigger miners, on hardware that by the time it arrives and is online, it's already out of date. You know what I mean?
Well, we talked last week about a company called Quantum Blockchain Technologies. It's a UK-based company, and they were working on making ASIC miners more efficient. Mm-hmm. So if that efficiency program or the program that they're doing is applicable to certain miners, it will make that mining company much more profitable. So I'm not sure how that will be applicable to Bitmain, but as you can see, everybody's trying to push the envelope. Bitmain is the biggest one out there, but there are others that are going to always try to push the envelope as well. If they're not going to be cutting edge, they're going to be left behind. They created in bulk. Like, if you're going to get a miner, if you're going to flip a coin, it's going to be Bitmain or everybody else.
Right.
But they still have to like be the pushing the envelope. And you know what? The S19s, they're powerful, but still you have to wait almost a year to get it, according to this story.
That's what I mean. So like by the time it comes, you know, like by the time it comes and you get it online, well, how much, you know, if Bitmain's already manufacturing and shipping out stuff that's better, I don't know.
S9s are profitable.
I'm not saying they're not profitable. I'm saying that if you're going to spend top dollar, like if you're a company that has money to buy this stuff, presumably you can go to Bitmain and say, I got $100 million to spend or $50 million to spend. I want to spend it with you, but I want to get the top of the line stuff. Should I be getting these or should I wait 3 months and get the next ones that ship 3 months after these ones would have? That's what I mean. And so I wonder if, first of all, I don't even know. Who knows, right? Maybe these guys are actually doing both of those things. Presumably they could be doing both and just announcing one half of the purchase, right? But anyway, something to think about. I've been kind of considering that last little while. I'm not sure where I'm going with that. But
there's a lot of factors to consider here too, because you have your shareholders, you have to be responsible to them. And, you know, you can't really go to your board and say, look, we're going to wait because it looks like 3 months from now, there's going to be a new product. Let's just hold off and buying. And what happens if nothing comes out in 3 months? There's a lot of different factors here. Sometimes the bird in the hand is worth two in the bush. Anyways, moving on.
Print the shirts, buddy. Bird in the hand, two in the bush.
Let's do it. DigiHost.
Here we go.
I talk about them every week for the past little while. Why? Because they have aspirations of going on NASDAQ. I'm not sure if it's going to happen, but I'm hoping it does. The stock price is going up and up. They finished their reverse split Wednesday last week. So the first checkbox has been done. But nonetheless, they announced that they have received 6,000 M30 Bitcoin miners. And they're 6,000. They're either some have been received or some are in transit. So they are going to be expanding on their hash rate in the not too distant future. DigiHost is a really good company that has potential to grow in terms of the price of the stock, not financial advice. If this thing, if they put on all the miners that they said they have bought in a not too distant future, and B, if they get listed on NASDAQ, this could be a real winner, Joey.
It's worth mentioning, Len only says not financial advice when he's talking to the crowd, but when he messages me in the middle of the night with these ideas, he never prefaces it with not financial advice. And in fact, he guarantees.
I asked for your money, man. Give me your money. I'll put it on DigiHost for you.
I own DigiHost. I own DigiHost. Yeah, you're probably right. Honestly, like I'll be honest with you, okay? We talk a lot about a lot of companies. And for me, some of the stuff you say sticks, other stuff doesn't stick. But you know what sticks for me now? When you say NASDAQ, that sticks for me. And so I did buy a bunch of this. The reverse split, you're right, was last week. I don't know what other hoops they have to jump through, but presumably if the reverse split was completed, they've already really, you know, done everything but formalized the move to the NASDAQ. So I have a pretty nice chunk of this stuff. I'm not going to sell it until that listing goes, but or is announced, I guess. I'm not sure, but
maybe when the reverse split happened, it was around $6, 6.05, 6.10, whatever it was.
Yeah, what is
today
it?
It was 750, 740-ish. So it
get
was
out of here. Was it really?
It went up pretty darn, and that's only in four trading days. People are getting wind of this.
725, another 5% today. Yeah. Good day.
People are getting wind of this. So I'm not saying it's gonna get listed on NASDAQ, and I'm not saying it's gonna be a winner, because obviously, what the hell do I know? But you know what? Take a look at this, do your own research, and you might be happy with the results.
I have to keep hitting these home runs because I want to continue to eat meat and eggs and drive my car to get them. So if I'm hitting anything but doubles and five baggers, I'm going to be eating nothing but soy and noodles pretty soon. So keep it coming. Keep the info coming.
Regardless if I hit these 5-bag, 10-baggers, or even if I lose my shirt, I'll still be driving my 20-year-old car. I don't give a shit what happens. I'm going to be driving that guy till the end of my days. Last company I want to talk about, Joey, is iMining. We haven't talked about them for some time, which is kind of strange because generally you have some news out of every Bitcoin mining company, but you know what? There's a reason why we haven't talked about them for some time. It was announced that they have delayed their annual filings for their year-end results, year-end reporting. And because of this delay, they were actually, their trading stopped on the exchange. Like, they were ordered by the British Columbia Securities Commission to have their trading stopped. And it was stopped for almost a month. October 5th, 2021 was when this order came down. And it just resumed today, but on November 1st, 2021. And it's because they finally got their information. Their annual filings have been finally submitted. So, wow. For, you know, almost a month, this stock was the trading has stopped on it. And that's incredible. And that's partially why I didn't hear anything about it. But nonetheless, trading has commenced again. So here you go. If you're still holding onto those bags, good for you, man, because you may want to consider, I don't want to say it because
what's the ticker?
I am I-N, I mine. I'm in.
Yeah, okay, I see it here.
So what is it, 15 cents, something like that?
It gapped up 13% today. It stopped trading for a month and went up by 13%.
Because the filings came out. Because you were stuck holding on to that bag for 1 month. The potential gains have been lost because you're stuck holding on and whatever. I don't want to go on too much into that. So if you are a iMining investor, good for you, because you have to have a long-term outlook.
How does that happen for a month? How is that allowed?
Hey, man, October 5th to November 1st. I know that's a long freaking time. But
really
what do I
long
know?
Time, man. A lot can happen in a month. Like, you know, my what? Football team can lose five more games in a month.
They can really tank. Yeah. And you know what's funny is, like, Hive took 6 months to announce their annual report. It was supposed to come out in March and it comes out in September. But, you know, nothing really happened except for some beating on the stock market. Yeah, their stock tank. Anyways, I digress. And that's it for the Canadian side. And let's go on to the rest of the news, Joey. We don't have too much time here.
We're running late here. Yeah. What are we doing? Let's talk 10 minutes for your no coiner. There's like 50 leaders in that picture. So you're going to need at least 10 minutes.
So I want to talk about the Illinois electric company, their electric utility company, AmeriCorp. And they are going to be mining Bitcoin to avoid wasting energy and stressing its power plant. We talked about it earlier with Bitfarms. Mm-hmm. They believe it's the first or one of the first utilities in the nation of the United States to do so. They have built a data center to guzzle the electricity from the electrical grid and help its power plants avoid ramping up their production up and down when there's a need and no need for electricity. And every time they're ramping stuff down and ramping things down, it stresses the power plants. So they figure that they're just going to put Bitcoin miners on the system. And when there's excess energy, they're going to mine Bitcoin. And the company has already mined 20 Bitcoin so far. I love it. These are the stories that we have to be talking about. It's utilizing energy, wasted energy, in fact, and they're mining Bitcoin as a result of it. I love it.
Can I take a victory lap on this? I think I discussed this with you probably 3 months ago.
Yeah.
And I said that the thing that people are missing when it comes to power being wasted is that every power plant in the modern world produces excess. They have to, because if they don't, the next time someone turns on a light in a house, if they're producing only what's needed all the time, there's going to be a lag and a problem, a brownout. And so these guys are the first of Len. We probably agree they're going to be the first of many, because that balance sheet is going to look real good in 18 months' time. And that these other companies are going to be saying themselves, like, what the fuck are we doing? We got all this power that we're producing. We're trying to get people to use less. And so, again, the market forces work in such a way that it lends itself to the excess being used for something else. Well, here's what you use it for. And if your balance sheet reflects positive outcomes here, you're going to get more people hopping on board. And then you're going to start to lobby for this. Power companies are a big lobby in the United States. And so I love this too. It's a great story. If only we could get someone in the north of the United States doing something like this more regularly, right? But like I said, it only takes one, right? It only takes one in the U.S. and then that'll really take off. And I know Canada is more friendly to this stuff. That's probably what you're going to say. But I would just say that in the U.S., that regulatory environment is the most important in the world for Bitcoin. And this is a good step.
I was going to say Ocean Falls blockchain. They're utilizing the local dam that's underutilized, and they're taking the energy that's being produced from it and they're mining Bitcoin as a result. So there's opportunities here that exist. Just got to find them and take advantage of it. Let's move on. We'll talk about a very large North American Bitcoin miner called Rhodium. We haven't talked about them before, but they filed with the SEC to go public. Their ticker is going to be RHDM, and their IPO values them at $100 million placeholder value. They have 1.8 exahash being hashed out right now, and they're anticipating to get to 2.7 exahash by the end of this year. I like watching these IPOs happen in Bitcoin miners. We had Stronghold Digital, I think that was the name. They went bananas 2 weeks ago when they went when their IPO took place. I want to see what happens with Rhodium. It's a very big Bitcoin miner in North America, one of the larger ones. I'm curious to see how this one plays out. It's going to be fun to watch.
What's the do you get the tickers in advance of the release? I think they come out a little bit before the IPO day, but not so far in advance. So you might not have this one yet, do you?
RHDM. Given I have that information, or everybody has it, it's public. I'm not certain if it's imminent that it's going to be the IPO is taking place, but at least we have the paperwork is there and you can easily see the ticker and RHDM. It's going to go onto NASDAQ. So I love it. I love it.
Much the same as the shitcoin market works, there's, I think, unit bias. I won't drag this out for too long, but there's definitely unit bias in the equity space. So the reason people, and I was joking about this with MassaCap on Twitter, the reason people don't buy NVIDIA and buy like AMD instead is because of unit bias. NVIDIA is like 300 American for a share and AMD is like 100 bucks, something like that. And so it happens here too. People won't buy Galaxy, like Possum is asking about in the chat. They won't buy Hive or Hut or Bitfarms. Even Bitfarms is cheap, but it's 10 times what you might get on an IPO market, especially on the TSXV. And so if people will think about this stuff, and if you have the stomach for the volatility and don't mind losing, you know, $1,000 if the thing tanks on IPO day, these are leveraged Bitcoin plays is what they are. And I don't know, you probably agree, but I think that if you really wanted to hit a home run, you know, sort of short of Shib Inu or whatever, like this is probably your best bet, something like this. So probably yeah, pay attention to it. Yeah, it is for sure.
Yeah. I want to talk about a couple of ETFs, Joey. And there's one in Australia from Mawson Infrastructure Group. They announced a listing of an ETF called DIGA. This is a digital miners ETF, Joey. We've been talking about this in the past, but it's being released in Australia. And this ETF is going to be including such companies like Galaxy Digital and Hut 8. Don't know if we have the ability to purchase it over here. I just have no idea how it works on the you know, such a far away stock exchange. Nonetheless, there is an ETF for Bitcoin miners, DIGA. And closer to home, we have Vault Equities. They just recently announced, and it went live, an ETF called, the ticker is BTCR. And the holdings on this one, absolutely phenomenal. This is based out of the USA, this ETF. So I believe we have options to, sorry, the ability to buy it. I'm just going to rhyme you some of the companies that are on the list. Starting from the top, I see MicroStrategy, Marathon, Bitfarms, Hut, Riot, Coinbase, Hive, NVIDIA, Square, Robinhood, Google. Let's see what we have here. PayPal, Twitter, AMD, Tesla. This is the ETF I've been talking about all this time. Yeah. I love this. It's got so much exposure into all these companies that hold on to Bitcoin or mine Bitcoin.
What's the ticker again, Len? Sorry, I don't want to cut you off.
Let me get it for you.
That's really good.
DTCR.
DTCR. Dave, Tom. Oh, BTCR.
BTCR. Bitcoin. Yeah.
That's and really good.
It's $2 and daily change is 44 cents, I believe, is the price of the seat. I could be wrong. I don't know, but nonetheless, this
crypto industry revolution and tech ETF.
Mm-hmm. What's the price of it?
It's $22.90 American, up 5% today.
There you go. Sorry,
you're only off by a little bit. That's okay.
It went up 44 cents. That was it. Sorry, my mistake.
That's good, man. I had no idea this was even out there. That's good info. I'm gonna buy some of this. That's actionable info.
Yeah. So kudos to Bitcoin Gandalf. He's the person that clued me in on this. If you haven't followed him on Twitter, please do so. The man is a legend.
Genius. Smart guy.
Yeah. Yeah. He's got the golden tongue. I just want to give him kudos. He's the one that provided me this information. But this one just went live just this past week. So it's very, very new. We've been talking about this type of ETF. We needed it. It's finally here. You know what? I'm going to see if I'm going to have enough. You know, I might just dump a few bucks in it because I like it. I love these ones.
Yeah, man. Yeah, man. Yeah. That's a good find.
So moving on, did you hear El Salvador? They bought another 420 Bitcoin.
Always buying the dip, baby. 420.
Good for them. Yeah. See, it's meme friendly, eh? 420. Gotta love it. But nothing more to say on that front. They're just stacking more Bitcoin on their side. MicroStrategy also mentioned that they're committed to buying more Bitcoin and they have zero plans to sell it. I hope that's the truth, because if they do start selling it, that's a lot of Bitcoin that they're going to be putting on the market, and that could really drive the price down. But they are saying right now that they have no plans to sell. In fact, they plan to acquire more Bitcoin. Let's see what happens, Joey.
He's leveraging the Bitcoin he's got too, I read today. So like, I got no fear this guy's going to sell. Plus the price is going up every like 3 months. The price is higher than it was 3 months before. In 4 years, everyone knows the 4-year rule. So, you know, the maturity date on the bonds is way out. I'm not worried about this at all.
In essence, he's doubled every dollar he put in. He's gotten $2, not back, but it's worth now $2 right. in Bitcoin. WorldCoin, Joey. Remember we talked about them last week, the shitcoin that scans your eye, your retina, and they're going to give you back shitcoins as a result. Well, it just was announced this past week that their developers, they're going to be withholding 20% of the shitcoins, and they're going to keep it for themselves. I'm fucking shocked, Joey. I'm absolutely shocked. Who knew? Yeah, I thought they would have released everything to everybody. They're going to make money off this? This is, oh, geez. I'm shocked.
It's so dumb. I don't even want to talk about this. I don't know if you got other shit to say about this, but I hate this story. I don't want to give these guys any press.
Joey, yesterday we had an anniversary. It was our birthday. It was the 13th year that we had the Bitcoin white paper come out. It was 2008, October 31st, that the Bitcoin white paper was officially released by Satoshi. So it was his birthday or the white coin, the white paper's birthday. So I'm not sure how you celebrated it, but I got a Kit Kat and I sat down and ate it and celebrated with that. So it was Halloween.
Did you give out candy last night?
Not only did we give out candy, I took my daughter around to collect candy too. So
good for you.
Yeah. Yeah. What were you?
I put my recycling bins on my porch, shut my lights off, and played COD.
A true old man who gives a shit about everybody.
I ordered pizza and I thank God.
Fuck you, kids. Did you hear that Burger King is teaming up with Robin Hood?
And they're going to be
So they're going to be offering Bitcoin, Ethereum, and Doge as prizes to customers. So the Burger King Royal Perks users who spend more than $5 on their app, they will be rewarded with one coin from a pool of either 20 Bitcoin, 200 Ethereum, or 2 million Doge. So you're likely going to get one of those Doge coin, the single coin, gifted to you. But there's an opportunity, a small chance that you get one of the 20 Bitcoin available. I'm not sure if this is available in Canada. I'm pretty sure it's just available in the United States. But you know what? Interesting story nonetheless.
There's no, like, I'm a Harvey's maximalist when it comes to fast food burgers. There's no amount of potential winnings that would ever convince me to put a Whopper in my mouth. I'll never do it. So
Whoppers Burger are very King,
tasty. Nah, you know, Len, I don't know why you had to say that. they're not good. I hate them.
They're tasty. Anyways, last story I have to talk about is some gentleman by the name of Aaron Rodgers. I think he throws a lot of touchdown passes from what I understand. And he says that he believes that Bitcoin is the future. He's teaming up with Cash App and he's taking a portion of his salary in Bitcoin as of today. Wow. That's a big name to get on the Bitcoin bandwagon, a big name to marry up with the Cash App. And it's a big name to take on Bitcoin as a salary. I love this. Freaking
huge,
great news.
Huge name. Yeah, it is good news. I'll say the only guy with a murderer, like this guy's dating history is a more potent murderer's row than the guest list we have coming up. That's about the only list that's better than ours.
I can't speak on it. I didn't realize that he had such a history.
Oh, man. It's better you just don't look, honestly, because you'd just be mad.
Fair enough. Yeah, that's it, Joey. So I was wondering, do you have a Bitcoiner of the week you want to talk about?
I mean, it doesn't even matter. I did one last week. I know you're going to go downhill. The people want it. The chat's hyped up. I mean, my no-coiner of the week is Yellen again. It's more like Yellen. Yellen represents something in America and the modern world that is just insane. This story that she's, you know, she says that this multi-trillion-dollar spending bill is going to help curb inflation. This thing where she gets on TV and says, don't think of it as a wealth tax. Think of it as just a tax on the wealthy. She's just a liar. She's a liar. And I hate to say it, but like her voice is annoying. I said on this show before, if they're going to talk about monetary and fiscal response, it cannot be her on the microphone because she's not articulate. She sounds like a Muppet. And like if I wanted to hear Kermit the Frog with a bad haircut, I would just watch Fozzie. What's the orange guy's name on the Muppets or Sesame Street? I forget what his name is, but this is to me like she's terrible, man. And again, like just I'm not going to go long. Just don't be fooled. Don't be fooled by what you see on television and what you hear. These guys don't care about you. I was joking with somebody on Twitter a couple of weeks ago last week, you know, one day the tax is for billionaires, then it moves down the list as a millionaire's tax, and then anyone who doesn't report any taxes, no matter how much income you have to pay a 15% Patriot tax. Like these guys went from billionaires only to literally everyone in 72 hours. 72 hours. That used to take years for that creep to happen. And now it happens on Twitter in the course of 3 days. Okay. You do whatever you want with your money, man. But I'm telling you, cash, like holding cash, this is a mistake. And I don't know what these guys are going to try and pass, but nothing is going to surprise me. That's for sure.
Well, didn't she make like something along the lines of $7 million?
Oh, yeah. 100%.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyways, that's incredible. She's getting paid a lot of money for those speaking engagements. Whatever, you know, she should be looking in the mirror because she should be one of the people that should be doling out.
And she's talking about, not to cut you off, but she's talking about we should just raise the debt ceiling without Democratic vote or without Republican votes. Like, what is going on over there? It's a kangaroo republic, man. Like, there is no debt ceiling. Why are they pretending? It's a LARP. The money is just being printed. Like, it's just control V, control C over there at the Fed. They don't care. Like, who thinks this matters? Who thinks it matters? I have no idea. But I'll tell you, I am doing what I said I was going to do. I'm building a bit of a cash position. Yellen's going to come out one of these days before the thing from 2 months ago gets close to expiring in December. She's going to say something, and it's going to give me a 5% look at every mega cap that I want to buy. Thanks, Janet.
You're missing an opportunity. Put that cash in DigiHost. It's going to go more than 5%. Then when that news comes out, you dump it and then you're better off than where you originally started.
Maybe.
Financial advice. So, yeah. So I'm going to be brief with my no coiner. I know people are probably expecting a very long-winded one, but I can't. I just don't have it. I'm going to start off with one person, and his name is Sean Tully. He was actually a previous no coiner I had. He writes for Fortune. And he came up with two articles this past week. The first one, I'm just going to read the titles. And when I read them, it boils my fucking blood, man. And the first one is, there's a rolling global disaster with Bitcoin that no one is talking about. So obviously, he's talking about the environmental impact that Bitcoin has. And the second article that he wrote, this one really, like, he really has to do some investigating on this. He says, every single Bitcoin transaction, even buying a latte, consumes over $100 in electricity, says a new report. Clearly, he's never heard of the Lightning Network. It doesn't cost $100 in electricity to buy a fucking latte on a Lightning Network. It costs fucking fractions of a penny. But that's just my opinion. And from what I understand with when I use my Lightning node and my Lightning wallet, nonetheless, this talk about Bitcoin and the environment, it leads me to what's going on in Glasgow, Scotland with the COP26. And you have all these world leaders, the IMF, negotiators, governments, all these people. The number, from what I understand, is tens of thousands of people. That's as per the IMF are going to be going to Glasgow to do their stuff, to talk about people, to talk about climate change, et cetera, et cetera. How are they getting there? Well, fuck, the private jets, the motorcades full of SUVs, all this fucking bullshit. It makes no fucking sense. If you're going to fucking talk the talk, walk the walk. I could give you one little secret here. And this is one good way to walk the walk. Fucking Zoom, man. Joey, you and I use Zoom every fucking week.
We're the most environmentally friendly Bitcoin podcast on the planet. We are ESG focused on this show.
That we are. So just to give everybody a heads up, I haven't seen Joey in person. I'm thinking since March, since we were locked down and we haven't seen each other since. We've been doing it on Zoom. So clearly we're able to operate in our own environments without traveling to each other's homes using something like Zoom. And I'm not trying to pump Zoom. There's also other online platforms you could use for virtual meetings. People have been working from home for a long time, the past 18 months, and they've been using all these programs. Why the fuck are these people going there, spending carbon and talk about how polluting the environment is bad when you are polluting the environment yourselves? Shit like Bitcoin, it uses a lot of energy. Fine. But fuck, if you're going to talk about environmental disaster that Bitcoin is, if you're going to talk about the environmental disaster that we all produce every day for using our laundry machines, our dryers, driving our cars, fucking walk the walk, man. It doesn't make no sense to me if you're going to go there, stand in front of a fucking pool and throw a shitcoin in it to make a wish. To me, it makes no fucking sense. You know, I'm done, man. It drives me fucking bonkers when this shit happens. I could just rail on them. And even further, the fact that none of them are protected. I don't want to say how they're protected, but there's no protection I see. You know what I mean, Joey? There's nobody has anything, if you know what I mean.
I know.
There's nothing. So why do I have to wear that protection? Why does my kid have to go to school and wear that protection on her face? But these people could go and just willy-nilly spend time close quarters with each other. And it makes no freaking sense to me, man. It makes no sense.
The other thing that drives me nuts is, like, I'm not saying there's not warming going on. I think there is. Like, I'm not one of these people who denies that it's happening. My beef is that there's a push to heavily change my day-to-day life, whether it's meat or driving or whatever, because I'm being told constantly that, you know, we're less than a decade away from this disaster that's going to be irreversible. And then I see that, you know, even though we're on the, you know, as a species on the precipice of a forced extinction event thanks to weather, these guys are flying around in jets. So if we're that close, like, certainly every mile, every kiloton of emissions, you know, it matters if that's really how close we are. And yet they don't care. And so, like, I just think for people who think that this is like 10 years away or 12 years away, like, are you dumb? You can't be that dumb. Truly, you cannot be that dumb for these guys to be flying around all over the world instead of being on Zoom. For them to be flying in motorcades, or driving in motorcades of giant, fuel inefficient, likely armored SUVs in some cases. You can't be that dumb. Don't be that dumb. Think about things from first principles and try and make a logical conclusion about what these people actually think. Much the same way as, you know, I'm not even gonna bother. What's the point of saying it? I'll probably get banned from Twitter or something. But I just think, like, just don't believe the hype and alarmism all the time. Think about what the people who are closest to the spigot of information, who presumably know more than you or I could know about the situation, what are they doing? If they're not stopping, then buy that steak, baby. Load up.
Well, speaking of that, what's happening over there, you know, taking those SUVs, the private jets, etc. It's like PETA hosting a fundraiser dinner, talking about how good it is to be a vegan, but serving fucking steak.
Yeah,
that's what it's like there. Like, what's going on over in Glasgow? It just, to me, if you're gonna do it right. Like, if you're gonna talk about how things, burning carbon is bad, well, find a way to not burn carbon and still meet up. Right. To me, that's the way to do it. Going there just for photo opportunity and to see old buds, to go check out, you know, whatever, some old golf course, whatever. Fuck off, man. Just fuck off. It doesn't make sense to me. And ultimately, we're all going to suffer for all these policies. Fuck them, man.
That's
just it. Fuck them.
That's it.
And so that's what all my no-coiners, there's a lot of them there, tens of thousands of no-coiners that are flocking over there. So
the best part is some of them are obviously holding Bitcoin. Like, you know, there's almost no doubt. So whatever.
They should.
God bless them, but it's an obvious joke to them.
For anybody that's going to talk to me and ask if it's a good investment, I don't care who they are. I'm going to tell them, buy it. It's a good investment for you. I don't care if they are somebody that's, you know, a true no-coiner. I'll try to convert them if they want to be fed that information. I'll be happy to do so. But that's it, Joey. That's it for the show. And obviously, neither of us are financial advisors, so don't take anything that we were saying as financial advice. Do your own due diligence. And did we experience a show pump for the price of Bitcoin? I got my fingers crossed. We went up
$60,951.19. The candle is $1 green from 8 o'clock. Oh, never mind. Now it's down $5. But no, we didn't get a pump, to answer your question.
75,321 in Canadian. So, you know what? I'll take it. We didn't get a show pump. That's fine. But for me to say that one Bitcoin is worth 75,000 Canadian dollars, that's not bad considering where we were in July.
Yeah.
I'll take it.
Take the stats where you can get them cheap, everybody. I'm gonna cut the audio. So thank you for tuning in. If you listen to the audio section or portion or platform, and we'll head to the live stream. So take care, everyone.
Take care.